If it is universal principles that create harmony and quality of life, how can you be certain to align your values to them? Quite simply, through your conscience. Our most significant world is our inner world. In that world is self-awareness, independent will, creative imagination, and our conscience. Only through self-evaluation are we able to look clearly to our paradigms, our beliefs, and our motives. The process of self-awareness develops your awareness of your conscience and how to use it to develop a balanced life. This means breaking down the internal walls that prevent us from facing our inner contradiction and seeing the truth about ourselves. These walls make us compartmentalize emotional feelings so that we create contradictory desires, intentions, and aims from each moment to moment. At one moment, we feel one thing, and at another moment, quite a different thing. If we could feel all the feelings that we have about something, we would awaken our true consciousness. That would be conscience. If we have some kind of constant wrong attitude based on wrong information, if we are self or work-centered rather than principle-centered, we always use the same kind of excuse. In doing so, we build walls, which become permanent. In this way, people develop fixed ideas and complete misconceptions about themselves. As habitual ways of thinking have only one aim, however misguided, to avoid unpleasant feelings and realizations about ourselves, people never really see how contradictory they are with themselves. A good example are the people whose position has led them to believe that they are excellent judges of character, yet who never evaluate themselves. Over the years, I have asked many people who hold a responsible position if they have to evaluate other people on a regular basis. The answer is, of course, always yes. On a daily basis, their position involves constant evaluation of colleagues, prospects, teams, clients, and customers. I then ask them if they seriously and consistently evaluate themselves on a daily basis. Only 5% are able to answer yes. The third question I ask is delivered on the basis that they answer from what their conscience and heart say, and not from what their intellect and head says. The question is, do you think that before anyone is qualified to evaluate another, or be a character judge, one needs to have evaluated oneself as to their own thoughts and actions? Not one of them has ever disagreed. And moreover, they admit that any true leader would greatly increase their effectiveness in relationships if this action became habitual. They see that the common practice of not doing it is not common sense. Not doing it stems from not thinking about it, and in order to change one's thinking, one must increase one's self-awareness. Awareness is being able to stand aside and watch everything happening to us, both within and without. Self-awareness must not be assumed. It must be experienced through experimentation. In your external world, start by noticing how people are unaware of their movements. Observe how their extremities fidget, their fingers drum or twiddle a pencil, their feet swing up and down, they gesture while talking. Then start to observe your own physical actions, your movements, and your expressions. Notice how you were unaware of them. Do you react when someone criticizes or questions what you do? If you do, then they are more in control of your feelings than you are. Do you feel differently when you are with someone that you want something from than when you are at home relaxed? If you do, then that someone is in command of you. At any one moment, you are either in control or not in control of your life. Being different when talking to someone that you want something from means that you are acting a role instead of being yourself. Ask yourself, do you know when someone wants something from you? Of course you do. And yet the tendency is to act in this inappropriate way because you need the deal, or the order, or the promotion. Your mind is reacting as you see the end result as vital to the security of what you are doing. There is a much simpler way, however, a way which always brings rewards. Work at being as relaxed with others as you are when by yourself. Do not allow the mere presence of others to make you nervous. Slowly but surely, the cosmetic yet compulsive behavior you portray with others disappears. You do not experience the exhausting effect that putting on the right face brings. You remain relaxed. Knowledge without understanding is useless. But by observing and studying ourselves, we can increase our understanding of why we do things in the way that we do, often to our detriment. As most tension and exhaustion arise from defending ourselves and our ideas, learn to question all your ideas which you feel you must defend, as you are defending your false self. The truth needs no defense, no justifying. It can be explained, but never needs defense. We have to become aware of an unhappy state before we can get rid of it. Notice your tension when trying to please people from whom you want something. Observe it. The tension is created from the mistaken belief that others can give you psychological rewards, consolation, or excitement. When you begin to stop thinking in this way, all your human relationships with others will be without tension. As constant evaluation develops awareness, start the habit of keeping a journal where you can write down the various reactions, responses, and resistances that you have experienced during the day or week. This is not a diary. This is a self-remembering account of your conscious level of awareness. Comment on your feelings of rejection that you may have experienced. We learn from rejection, not from acceptance, in the same way that a missile stays on target when its gyro rejects a wrong course. Risk rejection at every opportunity. This is how you break down the walls that harden your thinking. Start becoming aware that the barriers we put up to defend ourselves against illusory enemies are the same walls that keep us from breaking out to be true to ourselves. Become acquainted with your thinking by greatly observing it. Let your mind follow thoughts that flow one after the other. For example, security, then lunch, then worry, then tomorrow, then comfort, then car, then sex, then yesterday, then violence, then television, then work, then mistakes, then desire, then pain. When negative thoughts pass, just observe them casually, then let them go. A negative idea will disappear unless it is held onto by giving it non-existent value. No harmful thought need remain in your mind any more than you would hold rotting food in the cupboard. Freedom from self-defeating thoughts is also freedom from actions, which are later regretted. In understanding your true nature, you will begin to understand others more effectively. You will begin to recognize your strengths and weaknesses in a way that empowers you to focus on your strengths, rather than correcting your weaknesses, which is common practice. Put weaknesses to their proper use as an opportunity to develop character. Recognizing and exposing a weakness in the self builds strength and wisdom. Take, for example, the person who is cheated by another. The main reason they feel resentful is because their gullibility is exposed. But a willingness to learn from their humiliation will remove the gullibility. We must remember that the truth which damages our ego is the same truth which strengthens our character. To the same degree that a truth about ourselves disturbs us, it can heal. For example, if our self-observation reveals jealousy within us, we may want to deny it. But if we simply face the jealousy and see it as an acquired habit, not as part of the essential self, we weaken its hold on us. Defensiveness prevents fully experiencing something, which can free us. If we timidly avoid a friend with whom we have quarreled, we remain nervous. Yet if we permit a meeting with that friend, with no preconceived ideas of what to say or do, then we destroy fear. If we start with the principle that all can be changed by changing the way we think, then we are able to observe how we unknowingly create our current world. When, for example, someone does something that disturbs you, ask yourself why you are letting it disturb you. Examine yourself. Find out why you permit this person to dictate over your emotions. Ask why you choose to be disturbed instead of being receptive. Next, give up the false pleasure of feeling so indignant, which is self-righteousness anyway. Ask yourself, What do I listen to all day long? Is it the voice of social propaganda, what society deems as should and should nots? Is it the voice of your own internal distresses, which force you to be controlled by external influences? The only true voice is that of your own unified mind. A mind that attains unity through its own examination, using the true power of conscience, self-awareness, and creative imagination, is the only voice of authority. Commence the practice of explaining yourself to yourself, not to others. Use all your experiences with others to develop self-insights. Through the constant daily practice of observing your effects on others, you will learn how you can correct the actual causes from which your current thinking stems. To learn to think in a new way, we must learn to listen to ourselves with originality and freshness. Insight will develop understanding in evaluating others. Indeed, one flash of insight can clear up 1,000 difficulties. The universal law in understanding yourself is that each time you consent to a loss, you make a gain. So, by losing the desire to appear impressive and important, you no longer bend under the burden of artificial behavior. By not looking for security outside of yourself, external fluctuations no longer affect you. Too often, our external world is what it is, because we spend almost every moment of our lives trying to cover up our insecurities instead of understanding and dissolving them. Any person you feel the need to dominate or control in order that they will treat you with the appropriate respect will actually be in control of you and treat you accordingly. Why? Because anyone from whom you want something, psychologically speaking, is always in secret command of you. Any action we take to appear strong before another is actually read as a weakness. The more you demand or crave the respect of others, the less likely you are to receive it. It makes no sense to try and change the way others treat you by learning calculated behaviors or attitude techniques in order to appear in charge. What you are really looking for in your relationships isn't command over others, but over yourself. Trying to impress another, looking for approval, hanging on to every word, expressing contrived concern for well-being, fishing for a kind word, explaining yourself to others, are all examples of behavior through which we may be sabotaging ourselves while assuming we are strengthening our position with others. False illusions about ourselves and conditioned thinking make us dwell on what we are not good at. In turn, this makes us look for weaknesses in others. Based on the misguided belief that if you can identify and fix weaknesses, people will become stronger, the practice of fixing weaknesses to make an individual, and for that matter a family, a team, a company or organization, stronger and better, does not work. It is a practice that creates mediocrity and is certainly not aligned to the principles which ensure excellence. The principle is very clear. Find out what you are good at and do more of it. And find out what you are not good at and don't do it. In sending managers with no interest in selling on sales courses and salespeople with no interest in administration on administration courses, we believe we are creating efficiency. Many leaders evaluate and home in on mistakes, spending the majority of their time with their weakest performers. The belief is that the top performers will take care of themselves, so the 20% of the time they spend with them is usually spent demotivating them by pointing out where they are going wrong. Why? Because the whole paradigm of evaluation is to eliminate weaknesses rather than develop strengths. Just for a moment, think about your greatest mistake or failure. Okay, got it? Now think of your greatest success or achievement. Harder, isn't it? Why? Our whole mindset is programmed to root out weaknesses in ourselves and others. And that paradigm of evaluating is utilized when we make assessment of others. I'm not saying that we don't consider strengths. I'm saying that our attention is more easily attracted to what ought to be corrected rather than developed. If we learn to notice our own hidden strengths, we could then know what to look for and what to develop in ourselves and in others. Excellent teachers treat their pupils as equals who will achieve even more than they themselves have. Poor teachers, on the other hand, present information to be memorized. People who love their work are not even aware of the clock. Poor workers, though, are more focused on what they don't have to do. To the good coach or manager, winning means doing things right, improving the individual. Yet to the average coach or manager, winning is defined as getting the better score or bottom line figure. When we focus on weaknesses, it takes over our evaluation and smothers our perception of strengths. We start to feel sorry for, or sometimes annoyed by, or frustrated at someone's weaknesses. We offer pity and often criticism, which can lead to resentment at an individual's weaknesses, which are viewed as an impediment to a team's growth. The development of leadership will be created more effectively with the philosophy of aligning individuals to focus solely on their areas of strength. The practice of recognizing them in others can only follow the principle of recognizing them in ourselves first. If we understand that our attention will be drawn first to the attributes, anxieties, and insecurities that we see in ourselves, then we must therefore seek to put our own observation in order first, before we seek to put others where we feel they would be best suited. If not, we are in danger of assuming what is right for them. When a business is being built, it only has time to concentrate on its strengths. When it matures, however, it concentrates on making things right. It looks to fixing its weaknesses. Resources must be spent based on what people are good at, and not on wasting them on what they are not good at. Otherwise, a business can lose its edge. The most valuable discovery any leaders shaping their business can make are their own strengths and those of others. This natural process is simple when followed, but most of us are not motivated in this way. We can be motivated by the friendly advice of others, or even lucrative job offers, which sound appealing and may be financially rewarding, but take us away from what we are to do. The end result is that we ignore our true strengths and end up doing what others thought was best for us. Our work is viewed as just work, and we plan breaks away from it whenever we can. There have been many occasions when I have noticed an individual who is happy because it is the end of the week. They have finished work and are now able to enjoy themselves. When an I have to work becomes a I am my work, a release or escape from it does not have to be sought. It is not how hard you work that counts. It is how you feel about your work and how much of yourself you really put into it.
This is the end of the disc.